Today on the 21st Show, former President Donald Trump has won another term. On the way to victory, he even improved his vote share in Illinois, coming within 8 points of Vice President Kamala Harris here. We are breaking down the results and taking your calls at 800-222-9455. How are you feeling about the outcome? What factors do you think made Trump more appealing to more voters than Harris? And thinking about what comes next, what are you most excited about or worried about? 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Election Day 2024 is over, and so is the race for the presidency. Come January, Donald Trump will once again be president of the United States. This was an emotional election, and the outcome has led to big feelings across the political spectrum. Tom in Elburn sent us a text message this morning saying, "It's the economy. We were better off 4 years ago than we are now, thanks to runaway inflation." We also got voicemails from some of our fellow Illinoisans.
Hello, I'm Christine. I live in Savoy, but I'm calling from a train just outside Denver. I woke up to the nightmare that is our next president. I can't express in words how devastating this is. And I think we will see how devastating it is for many of the people in the country. Plan to go to D.C. and protest during the inauguration. If you believe in God, may he help us all.
Thank you for sharing your feelings, Christine. Votes are still being counted, but one thing seems clear. There has been a noticeable shift in American politics from 4 and 8 years ago. Illinois experienced some of that, where Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden both won the state by 17 percentage points. Vice President Kamala Harris is up by just 8. In a little while, we'll be talking more about what's happening at the national level and the role Illinois voters played in the election. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. But we begin with the results of races on the ballot across Illinois, from seats in the Congress to the Illinois General Assembly. With me to talk about that is Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, welcome back. Good to talk with you again.
Good to talk to you, Brian.
So it was pretty much a guarantee going into last night that Harris would take Illinois' 19 electoral votes for Democrats. But it took 45 minutes for the AP to call the race. And again, Harris only won by 8 points. What are your big takeaways from her relatively weak performance here?
Yeah, I think you really hit on an essential point. The fact that this was Trump's third consecutive loss in Illinois, but those previous two losses were 17 percentage points. I mean, this was the closest presidential election in Illinois since 2004, when John Kerry won Illinois over reelected President George W. Bush by 10 percentage points. I think there's a lot of takeaways here. Is one, I think the economy overall, we deal with a short-term memory electorate, and all of the issues involving Donald Trump from his tenure as president, the attempted insurrection attempt, his comments during the campaign that were incendiary. It all came down to people just wanting, I think, more of the economy and didn't care about the persona or how we got there. Just to try to fix the economy and lessen the effects of inflation on daily life.
So the one of the other things we were watching last night, of course, were congressional races. They were pretty inevitable in Illinois in terms of their outcomes, it seems. There were no real upsets. Even Eric Sorensen, who was projected by the pundits to face, you know, the possibility of a tough re-election race, he was projected by the AP to hold on to his seat. Is this something special the candidates have done here, or is this just the Democrats' congressional map doing exactly what it was intended to do?
I think it, all credit goes to the map. I mean, even if you remember back when Democrats first drew these congressional districts, and obviously Illinois had lost one seat because of population shifts in the nation, but the fact that they were able to draw these seats and were actually drew them in mind of winning 14 seats, I thought was a bit far-fetched. And sure enough, that's what happened, 14-3 majority. And Sorensen was obviously going to be kind of the keyed-in race, being he was the freshman in Congress, and they always are susceptible to getting kind of the race that goes on. But again, the map did its job as the Democrats had designed the map to do, and he ends up winning comfortably. One of the, you know, kind of going back to your first question, one of the overall takes I have here is I have to wonder that here in deep blue Illinois, the only survivor really of the blue wall, is that this may be a cautionary tale about progressive Democratic politics in the state.
It is interesting and worth remembering that just 10 years ago, half of the constitutional office holders in Illinois were Republicans, and we still had a Republican U.S. senator here.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things about when power kind of goes extreme on one side or the other. I mean, it's not that Illinois, I see any at any time, given its makeup, would ever vote as a state to for Trump as a state. But I do think when you look at kind of the reduced margin, you have, now this very progressive mayor in Chicago and Brandon Johnson, who is basically stumbling his way through his initial term in office. I do think there's a cautionary tale here that we still kind of are a Midwest state, and we're not as fully progressive as a lot of the progressives would like the state to be. But I don't think it can ever get there.
Yeah, well, that'll be an interesting to see where that goes. All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. And for the first part of our program today, we're talking about election results, specifically here in Illinois with Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune, 800-222-9455. And let's go to the phones now. We have Tara calling from Rockford on line two. Tara, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning.
How are you feeling about last night's election results?
I am actually just in shock and in mourning right now. I honestly thought there was no way that Trump would win again.
What are you most concerned about in a second Trump administration?
So really the climate, for one. We see what's happening. We see the changes happening right before our eyes now. It's not a 20-year from now problem, it's a now problem, and the effects that we need to be making now, that he's going to reverse the changes that we need to be making and make it worse. I am concerned, obviously, you know, women's rights, LGBTQ rights. I have a transgender daughter, and so just, you know, being worried about what that change is going to mean, all the lies and the hate that are being directed towards transgender people right now. I am concerned for healthcare. If he were to repeal, you know, Obamacare, not being able to get healthcare because of conditions that I already have, losing the pre-existing conditions. There's so many things. I'm appalled that we've elected a convicted felon. I'm just in utter shock and disbelief.
Yeah. Tara, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate you sharing with us this morning. Rick, Tara raises a point. She mentioned climate change policies as something she's concerned about. And Illinois is, as you mentioned earlier, it's this blue island in a red sea here in the Middle West. And that's true in terms of reproductive health, gender care, as Tara mentioned as well. The House, the Illinois General Assembly, the House and Senate here were never expected to lose Democratic supermajority status. But how do you think that the work, their work, and the work of Governor Pritzker might change under a Trump administration?
Well, I do think that, you know, just even looking ahead short term, we have the legislature's fall veto session is supposed to start less than a week from now. And while there really is no work for them to consider doing, there weren't any vetoes, I think you're going to see some active movement to try to look at places where the state can shore up various kind of protections for various aspects of the population, shore up protections for various initiatives that the state has done that can be in some way that they can shield themselves from anything that could come from the White House or federal law. But, you know, we are dealing with a new president who, the simplest way to say it is a wild card. And
someone who's promised retribution, literally retribution.
Right. He has been, and vengeance.
Yeah.
And no doubt we've seen how often Chicago has been a target of his attacks. He's talked about, obviously, the issue of immigration and how is that going to affect the dispersion of federal agency grants or things like that, or policies that he may have, Homeland Security, Immigration and Naturalization Services, any number of agencies that are under his control. So I do think there may be some consideration short term just to see if there's some way to build a wall around the island from Washington.
Yeah. And funding is another key, as you mentioned, in several areas. I know somebody who's been looking into education funding and how, you know, if the Trump administration decides to say, you know, no DEI programs, for example, if you want federal education funding, and how,
right,
what the legality of that would be. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and also Project 2025, as much as he tried to distance himself from it during the campaign, that's not to say that that still won't be somewhat of a playbook. And that, of course, would mean the end of the Department of Education, and along with that, all the various kind of social funding grants to go to educational institutions.
Yeah. One other race I do want to ask you about. This was not a statewide race, but I personally think the most interesting race in Illinois yesterday might have been for the Cook County State's Attorney. It's arguably the most consequential for the greatest number of people here among Illinois campaigns. Kim Fox decided not to seek re-election. She was one of a wave of progressive prosecutors. As we've talked about on the show, one of the reasons the Illinois prison population has dropped significantly in recent years is that she was sending fewer people from Cook County to prison. She was the campaign to succeed her was from Democrat Eileen O'Neill Burke, whom progressives say is more like a Republican, and Republican Bob Fioretti, who until 2 years ago was a Democrat. O'Neill Burke won easily. What do you make of this race?
Yeah, O'Neill Burke won very easily, 2-1. You do have to remember, though, in the primary, the race was against a candidate favored by Cook County Board President and Cook County Democratic Chair Tony Preckwinkle, and that took several days to result in the outcome with O'Neill Burke. But here again, I think might be a part of that putting the brake pedal on some of the progressive policies. While she labels herself as a progressive, she's already and supports, you know, the criminal justice reforms such as the Safety Act and no cash bail kind of thing. She's also talked about the fact that kind of the policy of retail theft would be enforced at $300 an incident rather than $1,000 an incident, as has been done under Kim Fox. And I think you'll see a more, right-leaning look at how policies are enacted in prosecutions in the Cook County State's Attorney rather than how they've been done under Kim Fox. Bob Fioretti is basically just become a perennial candidate. He was the Republican candidate for state's attorney, really had no chance, and was never viewed really as a realistic candidate for the office.
Big picture, Rick, just a couple of minutes left before we have to take a break. Insofar as there is a message to be taken away from the results of this election in Illinois, what is it? What should our political leadership in this state be thinking about?
Well, I mean, given that we are a state that is led by Democrats, a one-party state, I do think that there needs to be a bit of introspection here over, you know, we're still a very sharply divided state between upstate and downstate. And, you know, those downstate areas that are the most ruby red used to be Democratic counties. And there are no Democratic counties downstate virtually anymore in deep southern Illinois. And I think some introspection is needed because this is a party that was kind of based on labor and working people. And it's really now kind of looking more and more as a kind of a preaching kind of party of this is the way life should be, and you know, we're going to come and make you join us. And I think really some more contact to reach those Trump voters and try to figure out how to make the party kind of go back to its roots without losing the values that it espouses should be kind of the goal of what Democrats should be looking at in this state.
Well, we will continue to have these conversations. Rick Pearson, Chief Political Reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Good to talk with you. Thanks for making the time.
Always good to be with you, Brian.
Coming up after the break, we are going to continue talking about yesterday's election. We've got a panel of experts. We also want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know by now, Donald Trump has been elected to another term as President of the United States. There is excitement among his supporters. Sarah in Rockford texted us to say, "I am excited to see what a functioning red government looks like. I don't like Trump as a person, but I think his policies are solid. As a mid-30s mom struggling with daily costs, I look forward to better 401k performance, steady/reduced inflation rates, and sensible, hopefully smaller, government," Sarah said. Thank you for your message. We also heard from many of our fellow Illinoisans feeling grief. Paul in Urbana said, "Paralyzing nausea." Elle in Athens said, "I'm feeling hopeless and mean. I believe America is going to collapse." And in Urbana, feeling absolutely frightened. Barb in Gibson City, totally lost. Sherry in Hayworth, heartbroken, angry, sad.
This is Shay. I'm calling from the village of Matteson. The most fearful that I am is what will happen with the erosion of things that have been gained by African Americans throughout the years. I'm fearful of how bad it is right now for women's rights and the idea that it is a divided country. And I think the problem with this is rooted in racism. I'm not fearful so much for myself. I'm fearful for my children and my children's children. It's a sad day, not because we have a Republican president. It's a sad day because of who the president is.
Thank you for that message, Shay. You can join us at 800-222-9455. How are you feeling? What factors do you think made Trump more appealing than Harris? And thinking about the coming 4 years, what are you most excited or maybe you're fearful about? 800-222-9455. To help us think through what happened, we're joined now by Isabel Skinner. She's an assistant professor in the School of Politics and International Affairs at the University of Illinois Springfield. Michael Strawbridge is a professor of political science at Washington University. in St. Louis. And we specifically also wanted to talk a lot about Latino voters. There's been a lot of attention to that voting group this year and the role they played in the election results. So here to talk about that is Hugo Balta, Chicago-based publisher of Latino News Network, which provides Latino-focused news coverage across the country. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being with us. Isabel, I want to begin with you. How are you processing what happened yesterday?
Good morning, Brian. So maybe not such a good morning, but I haven't had a whole lot of sleep, so I apologize. I'm definitely still processing. I taught class this morning at 10 a.m. and the mood was pretty bleak, but it was important for me to show up for my students this morning. A lot of them are scared, and I'm scared too, so I understand.
Michael Strawbridge, what about you?
I share many of the same sentiments that Isabel just shared. I have to go teach in about an hour and a half, and I'm still kind of racking my brain thinking what I'm going to say to my students. I think in some ways, a lot of the concerns and fears are so valid. I have on my computer right now, you know, I'm intensely watching the remaining House races, because I'm wondering, are we moving towards a unified Republican government, or will we have a Democratic House? Because that has grave implications for the Republican agenda for the next 2 years going into the midterms. So I'm still, you know, concerned but anxious, as there's a lot of tight races to play out still in the House.
And Hugo, what about you? Top line reactions.
I am not surprised with the outcome. I think Vice President Kamala Harris had a Herculean feat to overcome in just a little more than 100 days before Election Day, when she was officially given the nod by the Democratic Party. What I'm looking at is how former President Donald Trump won, and really looking at the numbers and leaning in, especially on the Latino electorate, because there are so many paths that helped them regain the White House. And I think it's important to study those numbers and look behind those numbers to better understand why so many people, including Latino electorate, Black Americans, voted for Donald Trump.
I want to dig deeper into that in a moment. I do want to get some more callers in. There's obviously a lot of interest in people sharing their views today. We have a caller calling from Scott County in Iowa. She doesn't want to use her name. This is on line one, but caller, go ahead. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. It's hard to express well how I'm feeling this morning. So I'll just share the story that prompted me to call in. So I went to a Democratic gathering last night, and as you might imagine, the mood got glummer as the evening went along. And not long before I left, a woman came in that I recognized but didn't know. So I can't even, if you said, can we interview her? I'm like, don't know her name. I'll just put that up front. But she had been a poll worker in Davenport in what was usually is maybe still, don't know. Anyway, a Democratic precinct, and many people voted Democratic on most of the ticket, but voted for Trump as president. And she and I, well, my takeaway as a woman living in this country, I've known for years, and I'm a white woman, I'm happy to say that we're a sexist, racist country.
That is something we heard from a number of listeners. So yeah, go ahead. You think that was? Do you think that was a decisive factor in this particular election?
I think it was. Yes, I think it was significant. I don't discount that the economy and inflation was an issue, and I know a lot of people have had trouble with, you know, grocery prices and things. But I think Republicans played that up, and I don't think it was as bad. Well, let me rephrase that. I think that was part of it, but I think there were some people that were no way going to vote for a woman of color for president.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Jim is calling from Springfield on line two. Jim, thank you for calling in.
Hi. Yep, I'm here. I tried to fit. what I think in as fast as I can. But
appreciate it.
You know, I'm thinking back, you know, over the past, I mean, as many Republican nominees as I can think of, they're all very vanilla. They're not noticeable. You know, Trump is. He pushes. He says he's going to make things cheaper. He's going to make gas cheaper. He's going to make food cheaper. He's going to secure the border. Whether you believe it or not, he says it. My problem is the Democratic Party don't push these things hard enough. Harris could have done the same thing, but she didn't. I'm one of those people that misses Barack Obama a lot. I think he was a wonderful president, but he said he was going to codify Roe. He never did. They just don't push, and I think that's what people are receptive to. And I think the Democrats are just not aggressive enough. Trump is, and it worked out. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the call. And Rich is calling from Champaign on line three. Rich, you wanted to address a text message I read earlier. This is from Sarah in Rockford. She was the one who said she's excited to see what a functioning red government looks like and mentioned she was a mid-30s mom struggling with daily costs. Rich, I know you wanted to respond to that.
Yes. I just want to know what magic wand the new president is going to wave to, you know, automatically lower prices and make everything, you know, just wonderful again. He's just blathering. It's all he is. And it's just, you know, I mean, the president doesn't control the economy, basically. Anyway, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Rich. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show, and we are talking about the re-election, or I guess, do we say election, to a second term of Donald Trump as president, why it happened, and how we are processing that news. Isabel, I want to come back to you. What do you think? And I know it's still early days, and I do want to say, in this conversation in general, we are going to hear a lot of hypotheses in the coming days and weeks about what the key factors were that turned this election out the way it was. These are things that are going to be studied and argued over for months and years and maybe even generations to come. So we're going to have some epistemic humility here. But Isabel, to the extent you've been able to think about it, what do you think were some of the key decisive factors in this outcome?
Yes, thank you. So I think that one of the commentaries that I saw early this morning, and I definitely feel like resonates with me, is this idea that Trump ran a campaign based on fear mongering, particularly about minority groups. And I'm an expert in immigration, so I know that ideas about immigration are based on perception, not on reality, very similar to the economy as well. You know, many economists would tell you that the economy is not looking as grim as the public believes it is. But if the public believes it, that's enough. So I think that this symbolic politics, or, you know, putting the ideas out there, basically playing up factors that he knew would work, like immigration as a wedge issue, casting, you know, dire projections of the current economy and then promising to fix it, those kind of things resonated. And so I believe that fear was a major motivating factor. Also, we see that partisanship is really based off of kind of a sense of like a team identity, or it's not always necessarily about policies. And, you know, people aren't 100% rational. So we might try to do what's best for us, but I've found particularly, and I wrote about this in a recent op-ed that was published in Visible Magazine, that when it comes to Donald Trump as a candidate and as a person, when he tells the truth, we're asked to believe that, oh, you know, he's just blowing smoke. He doesn't really mean it. But then when he lies, that's supposed to be taken as gospel. And I think that that's really troubling. So obviously, a lot of political scientists and other thinkers are talking about threats to democracy. And that's really where my heart is at right now. That's why I roll around in bed all night long last night, worrying about our democracy, because this election brought a lot of people out, and that's a good thing. This was a democratic election. I'm just worried about what happens next.
Hugo, we've heard mentioned a few times now this idea of immigration being such an important issue. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're based in the Chicago area, and that was an issue made more salient up there this year, or in the last 2 years, I should say, because of the busing of migrants up from Texas. How have you seen that affect the electorate in your area?
Well, look, I think when we look at immigration and we look at polling that asked that question, not only to Latino voters, but to all registered voters, it does make the top 10, right? It's very important, especially as it has been said, it is the constant negative rhetoric of the Trump administration, sometimes riddled with misinformation. But I think while that is important to the Latino electorate, it is not more important than the economy, than pocketbook issues like housing, like jobs, like inflation. And so while, yes, you know, when you listen to the rhetoric, especially in a 2 weeks ago, we heard the comedian say disparaging remarks about the Puerto Rican community, certainly in Cook County and in Chicago, a large portion of Latino voters are Puerto Rican. People are appalled by it and certainly are against it, but they're not voting necessarily based on Donald Trump's rhetoric, disparaging comments, insults to the Latino community. They're voting to put food on the table, to put a roof over their head, and to support their families.
And that is such an interesting point. And one of the poll findings that has stuck with me most this election cycle, I think it was in a New York Times Siena poll, it said, and it was specifically asking Latino voters, when President Trump makes, you know, disparaging comments or says there are problems with migrants, immigrants, do you think he's talking about people like you? And a majority of both native-born Latinos and foreign-born Latinos say, no, I don't think he's talking about people like me. Can you talk about how you understand that? Yeah.
No, I think that's an important point. Too often, the Latino electorate is seen as specifically race and culture, and not really by both parties, both major parties, although I would say clearly the Republican Party did a better job of chipping away through some of that bias and stereotype, instead of really seeing the electorate in regards to how they self-identify. So when we're talking about the Latino electorate, we're talking about American citizens, right? And not just naturalized citizens. We're talking about, as it is often year after year, Latinos that have come of age, have turned 18 since the last election. And then you're also talking about second, third, in Texas, four and five generations of Latinos. So they very much see themselves as Americans. And one of the things that the Trump administration and Republicans across the board have tapped into is understanding that the majority of Hispanic Latinos in the United States are U.S. born, and a majority of them are blue-collar workers. They're the same types of disenfranchised voters that Trump tapped into in middle America in 2016 that felt ignored by the Democratic Party. When we talk about the Latino electorate, it's more about culture and ethnicity, and it's more about their lived experiences as voters that are blue-collar workers, are not, in generally speaking, don't have a higher education, and they feel ignored by the establishment.
I guess it's a form of, we need to take a break, but maybe this is a form of a sort of class solidarity, although probably not the way people on the left wanted to see it play out. We're going to continue this conversation with Hugo Balta, Isabel Skinner, and Michael Strawbridge, and you. 800-222-9455 is the way to join us here on the 21st Show. 800-222-9455. Just going to read a couple more messages. Terry Dickey in Springfield by email. Deeply disappointed, disturbed that Trump won, not fully surprised. We all now need to hold Trump accountable for his campaign promises. especially the media, he said. All right, join us, 800-222-9455. More to come. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the re-election of Donald Trump to the presidency, or again, maybe I should say the election for a second term, why it happened, how we are processing the news, and what happens next. We've heard from a lot of you this morning by text message. Aaron in Springfield says, knowing I was correct about the level of stupidity in the electorate is not comforting in the least. How do you really feel about that, Aaron? Katie in Springfield said, I'm most fearful that we will all be too afraid to fight to protect the most vulnerable. Let us know what you think. 800-222-9455. We're talking about this with Hugo Balta, Chicago-based publisher of Latino News Network, Isabel Skinner, professor in the School of Politics and International Affairs at the University of Illinois Springfield, and Michael Strawbridge, professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis. Michael, we had you on the show about a month or so ago to talk about the gender gap in this election. Women were said to be breaking more for Harris. Men were going more for Trump, and that was especially pronounced among younger generations. I guess time will tell as people analyze the vote to see whether that played out the way people thought it would. But how do you, based on what we know so far, how are you thinking about the question of gender and how it affected this election outcome?
Yeah, gender became a very interesting story since the last time we spoke about this, because we think about first the salience of abortion access this year. Several states had it on the ballot there. And we saw the simultaneous success of, you know, several states, you know, overturning abortion bans and expanding the access to abortion there at the same time that we saw some pretty staunch, you know, Republicans who are anti-abortion winning there. And that makes you wonder sort of how there was split voting on folks' ballot. But then you also think about some of the demographics of, you know, the story right now for me has been white women. And it's a similar tale to what happened the last time Trump won there. And actually, I'm seeing, you know, the exit polls so far are suggesting, you know, a jump in terms of the number of white women who voted for Trump compared to last time there. And then you contrast that with the other group that's been talked about so much in the gender conversations, and that's Black men, of, you know, everyone preparing to have the story of blaming Black men this election cycle here, and them really departing from the norms that you see amongst Black women there. Meanwhile, you're looking at the exit polls, and Black men's support is almost on par exactly with what it was in previous elections there. There isn't this overwhelming turn towards the Republican Party there. So I think we need to reevaluate our conversations about gender and gender gaps within different racial groups, because the focal point was seemingly around Black men and there's less of an emphasis on white women.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Mike calling from Champaign-Urbana on line two. Mike, thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just am disappointed in the Democratic Party in general, but I wonder if the way they handled Joe Biden and dragging out Kamala at the last minute had anything to do with her success. I'm not sure that anyone could be prepared to run for president with that short notice and also get the message out about who they are and what they want to do. And I'll hang up and thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Mike. Nathan is calling from Jacksonville on line one. Nathan, thank you for calling in.
Hey, I'm ironically leaving my therapist's office right now. I didn't even plan that when I scheduled it. But yeah, he asked how my mood was this morning, and I was like, jury's out on that one still. My wife and I were sitting there last night just watching, and we've literally been talking about having kids, and we both look at each other, and not so much because a Republican's in office, but because he's in office, and we don't know if we want to wait or if we want to try right now. We want to, but with him in there, we're both just terrified. So that's just kind of where we're at right now.
And you would let that, and no judgment, I'm just asking, you would let that make influence your personal family decision about who's in the White House?
It's not that there's a Republican in. That's not the problem.
Hmm.
It's that he's in. It's him, not the party. I would prefer a third party, but I don't know. He scares her for sure. And I'm not a fan either.
Hmm.
I don't know. Jury's still out, and this is just as of last night. Give it time to sink in.
Everybody's thinking through it. All right, Nathan, thank you so much for calling in. And one more caller. Will is calling from Oregon, Illinois. Will, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to share maybe a different perspective.
Please.
I believe that Trump got elected because of the acrimonious nature of this, of the media coverage on all sides. His side, Democrats, third party side. I think that in looking back at this election, I think that people will find that the tribalization really happened because the media, radio media, print media, TV, they cast this election in such stark terms that I think that human beings, being very emotional creatures, they were grouped together. And I believe you mentioned earlier, a couple callers ago, that this sort of class narrative that emerged, it was not anticipated by the Democrats, and it's not welcome, obviously. But I think that that really boosted his electorate, and it really gave rise to this idea that, yes, it, just like everything that he said, we are all under attack, and I think it really motivated his base, and that's why he won.
Will, thank you for sharing your perspective. I appreciate it. Isabel Skinner, let me ask you this, because we have talked on the program about the future of democracy. That is, we had a whole series a couple years ago, Building a Better Democracy. And on the one hand, if somebody looks at this and, has the lessons of history in mind, there are reasons to be very concerned about the things that Trump has said and the things that he has promised and just his general sort of attitude towards governing and the presidency. On the other hand, as Will was saying, maybe by talking about that so much, people kind of roll their eyes and tune it out, and it's hard to reach people. And frankly, there just aren't as many trusted media outlets as there were 20 years ago. A lot of newspapers have collapsed. There's been consolidation. There are fewer reporters at the outlets, at a lot of the outlets that are left. Isabel, how are you thinking about that?
This is a really important conversation. And I struggle with this every single day, but especially today. How do I strike the balance between telling the truth and quite frankly, warning people based off of my knowledge and my expertise? I feel either really smart or really dumb this morning to have invested my life in studying American politics and becoming a professor at a public university. I'm either in the right place or the absolute wrong place, because the folks that are in the intelligentsia and academia are often the first to feel some of these effects, alongside vulnerable people, but people in roles of expertise are often in a precarious position when changes like this occur. I would say that I don't want to, fan the flames of hostility towards my fellow Americans. I think that it's important the way that we talk about this matters and rhetoric matters. But at the same time, I think we have to be very careful about understanding these threats. Historically, presidents that seek more power, that power doesn't go away. The power of the presidency just continues to expand. Historically, when we talk about people that do have authoritarian tendencies, most of those folks were elected by the public. And they obviously do not choose to step down when it's time for another election. So I am very seriously concerned about those issues.
Brian, if I may add to that,
please.
I do agree that the media played a role in regards to the outcome of the election. And I absolutely agree with the constructive criticism of media in what's been called sane washing Trump in regards to his rallies where he goes on and on and on. And then what we end up listening on the radio, watching on television, or looking at quotes in newspapers or the digital platform are these condensed, very focused responses to questions that he normally takes minutes to respond. And so media has normalized Trump, not just in this campaign, but during his four years in his first term and when he was a candidate the first time around. So I think that media absolutely spends too much time catering to the left and to the right, and not enough time and focusing on producing news and information that is fair and accurate and respecting their audiences to make the decisions for themselves.
Interesting perspective. I appreciate that. We had a caller, Rena from Southern Illinois, had some connection issues. We're not going to put her through, but she said she's happy with the outcome of the election, thinks it will help America gain the respect of the world again. I also want to go to Gary in Springfield on line four, who has been holding for a while. Gary, your patience.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I've got a few points. My first point is that I wasn't satisfied with either one of the candidates. I was looking at a third party candidate, and that didn't happen. And so I ended up voting for a right-hand candidate. I do feel my reasons for that is that the Democratic Party, to me, I'm an African-American male, and they don't show respect to the African-American male like they should. Again, the way they just replaced Biden and put Harris in there, I wasn't satisfied with that. I'm not a sexist or anything like that. I just think that was a bad move on their part. The Republican Party as well, I feel, don't show respect to African-Americans in general when it comes to certain offices, not just in national or statewide, but just local offices. And so I decided I think it's time for us to get a third-party candidate, and I'm working very hard for that to happen. As you can see, you know, look at the choices we had. We really didn't have really good choices. I did vote for Trump the first time he ran and got into the White House, and mm-hmm. I voted for him because I was back at his policy when it came to building the wall. Unfortunately, I don't think we ever got that wall built. And so I'm holding him since he won. In my mind, I'm holding him to what he said about doing something about immigration. I think that has caused a problem throughout the country, and specifically for African-Americans.
Yeah.
And as you can see, we got a big backlash from African-Americans by bringing these migrants to the city like Chicago, Illinois. I'm sure you paid attention to that.
Yeah. All right. Gary, I'm sorry to cut you off. We are so short on time. I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective today. I guess time is almost up. Michael Strawbridge, let me come to you. What are you going to be watching for in the weeks and months ahead?
I'm going to be watching to see how the Democratic Party responds in terms of reckoning with their strategies for appealing to voters. You know, the immediate rhetoric of Kamala ran a flawless campaign, Kamala did nothing wrong, all that fair. That's a bit alarming to me, because anytime you lose a race, you have to reckon with what can we do different there. So I want to see what kind of actual strategic differences Dems are going to make to think about how they appeal to voters and understand what went wrong, or if they're going to, you know, run with this narrative of it's not us, it's the voters. Because that's going to be telling then of what to expect in the midterms and who they may put forward in the next presidential election. So I'm really watching to see the sort of like, you know, review and game film that they do as a party to understand what they can do different moving forward.
All right. Michael Strawbridge, professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis, Hugo Balta, publisher of Latino News Network, and Isabel Skinner, professor in the School of Politics and International Affairs at the University of Illinois, Springfield. Isabel, super briefly, I understand you wanted to plug an event that's coming up.
Yes, UIS will continue this conversation. We have an event called The Election is Over, Now What? Next week on November 14th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. in the Student Union Ballroom and via Zoom. This event is open to the public if you would like to continue this conversation
on campus. And we will put a link to that on our website. Thank you all, Hugo, Michael, Isabel. Thank you all so much for being with us today on The 21st Show. One last message, Terry, who writes in from Melbourne, Florida, sent an email raising some concerns about policy stuff, the inflation that may result from the tariffs Trump proposed, the rule of law, the peaceful transfer of power. We are going to be talking about all these issues in the shows ahead. Let us know what your questions and concerns are. What topics would you like us to cover? Talk at 21stshow.org, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you tomorrow.